This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Namai, haere mai, kia ora tanakwe, Free FM 89.0, independent community media. Welcome to Cosmopolitan News and Views. Fog lifting this morning, but remaining cloudy, then rain at night with light winds. Tomorrow, a period of heavy rain with possible thunderstorms easing to a few showers in the morning. Northerlies turning westerly early morning. Sunrise this morning was at 7:28 a.m. and will set again tonight at 7:19 p.m. In the city, we're expecting today 24 degrees, 17 degrees overnight. And at the present moment, we just take a look at the Hamilton temperature, which is sitting on just getting the Met servers up, and the it is 18 degrees in the city at the moment, so it's going to be another warm day. Yeah, strange weather this week. Two mornings of fog. Yeah, poor jockeys yesterday had to go to race meetings and they got affected by it. Anyway, what's on my mind? The opinion is mine. Column comment, May 29. History, culture, birthdays and deaths. New Zealand Hit Parade, chart.org.nz, March 29, 1979. American and world politics. Gary Schofield, Dwayne Porter on the latest shipping information. And before 2 o'clock, we've got Trevor's Talk. I thought hard on what I'm going to talk about today. I want to talk about the media and the process of change we are going through. I grew up, of course, with the days of the NZBC radio and television. All the radio presenters also appeared on television, such was 1XH, 1ZH in Elmer Street. They had a television studio in the basement, and people like Russ Daly, Edwin Brayshaw and others appeared on radio and then did television shows reading the news. But news was controlled. Headquarters was in Wellington. And, of course, Rick Carlisle in his memoirs put it out there that any stories were both television and radio. But today we are moving on with online platforms. One doesn't have anything to do with the BSA. One host said something derogatory towards the Muslim community this week. This online platform does not have any time for the BSA, but maybe that is going to change because the BSA is trying to get control of these online platforms. In Britain, they've got Ofcom, which controls what can be done and what can be said on anything, television and radio. There have been incidents where broadcasters or companies have been fined heavily. Maybe we need something like Ofcom in this country to control what goes on in the media. Luckily, Free FM, of course, does abide by the BSA. You hear the ads played for it. So, yeah, but there are online platforms. One, of course, doesn't like the BSA. Another still has conspiracy theories about COVID-19. So, what platforms do you listen to? Radio or television? Online, you go overseas to BBC, NBC, CBS, Al Jazeera, which I was watching this morning, etc., etc. There's got to be control of the media. Fox has stories on Donald Trump, which are pleasing to him. If you don't please Donald Trump and the media in America, you're in trouble. Such as Stephen Colbert, who leaves the airwaves in May. It's 12:45, Free FM. It's day 151, 214 to go. Today in 2024, 64,800 attend Warbirds Over Wanaka Air Pageant.
His face was flushed and he found breath was hard to get. And he said, Daddy, would you like to know a secret? I haven't even told my teddy yet. I don't need my little yellow airplane. My roller skates grow rusty by the door. Billy Smith would probably like my cowboy suit.
In Politics 2023, PM Chris Hipkins announces an investigation into Stuart Nash's connections with sponsors. In 1871, this day, Queen Victoria opens London's Royal Albert Hall. Idi Amin flees the Ugandan capital of Kampala.
For a while, to love was all we could do. We were young and we knew in our eyes. We're alive, deep inside we knew our love was true. For a while, we paid no mind to the past.
It was in 2024, this day, the death of actor Lou Gossett Jr., an officer and a gentleman. In 1973, that US troops pull out of South Vietnam.
I'm coming home, I've done my time. Now I've got to know what is and isn't mine. If you receive my letter telling you I'd soon be free, then you'll know just what to do. If you still want me.
And it was this day in 1943 that Monty Python star, writer, actor and song producer Eric Idle was born. He's 82 today, and let's remember this from the fabulous Eric Idle, Monty Python's Flying Circus. And you can all sing along with us.
Some things in life are bad. They can really make you mad. Other things just make you swear and curse when you're chewing on life's gristle.
From Monty Python's Life of Brian.
Give a whistle and this'll help things turn out for the best. And always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the light side of life. If life seems jolly rotten, there's something you've forgotten, and that's to laugh and smile and dance and sing. When you're feeling in the dumps, don't be silly chumps, just purse your lips and whistle, that's the thing. Hey.
Always look on the bright side of life.
Come on.
Always look on the bright side of life.
It's quite absurd, and death's the final word. You must always face the curtain with a bow. For forget about your scene. Give the audience a grin. Enjoy it, it's your last chance anyhow.
So always look on the bright side of death. Just before you draw your terminal breath.
Life's a piece of shit when you look at it. Life's a laugh and death's a joke, it's true. You'll see it's all a show. Keep them laughing as you go. Just remember that the last laugh is on you. And
always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Come on, Brian, cheer up.
Always look on the bright side of life. Always look on the right side of life.
Where's things happening to see, you know?
Always look on the bright side.
I mean, what you got to lose? You know, you come from nothing, you're going back to nothing. What you lost? We'll come from nothing, you know what I say? Cheer up, you old bugger. Come on, give us a quiz. There you are. See? It's the end of the film. Incidentally, this record's available in the foyer. Some of us got to live as well, you know. All right, it's the lock. Let's get this place locked down. I can change this mantle within 3 weeks. What do you think plays for this brother? Bernie, I said, they'll never make that money back.
Still a favourite many years later from the Monty Python's Life of Brian. Yeah, the scene on the cross, of course, with Eric Idle and Graham Chapman, the late Graham Chapman, always look on the bright side of life. Well, New Zealand Hit Parade, chart.org.nz, March 29, 1979. Number 20 was Elisa Bridges, I Love the Nightlife. Born July 15, 1953, the first single from her album, Elisa Bridges. Highest chart position in New Zealand was number 4. And this is Elisa Bridges.
That's Sean.
Let's go back to the disco days. Remember this, it's 7 minutes to one. Good afternoon, Malcolm. Listening in on the radio. He remembers this.
I love the nightlife. I've got to forget.
Been through.
FM 89.0 Independent Community Media. That is I Love the Nightlife. That's Alisa Bridges. Do you still like the nightlife, Stephen King?
Yeah, immensely.
And how are you? And happy Easter to you.
Easter
next weekend?
Yes.
Okay, it's over to you. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I was just thinking, last week I celebrated 35 years sober and clean of narcotics.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been all those years in, you know, what's often perceived as some strange world. But it's not. It's just I don't do drugs or alcohol.
When did you start taking drugs?
I started at a relatively young age, about 19, must have been 69.
Were you down in the dumps or...?
No, I think there's many different reasons. I've studied a lot, the subject a lot, because I work in the field.
Yeah.
Suffered from dyslexia as a child, you know, so I had that. But people have all sorts of different reasons. In some cases, people have no reason at all.
Well, 19...
But, you know, 69, that's, of course, Woodstock.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about Flower Power and Janis Joplin and others who were around at that time. Joe Cocker were around that time, and they were heavily into drugs. And as I said last time we talked to you.
We knew no better at the time, really. It was, you know, contraception arrived. I hate to say it, you know, Woodstock and women's liberation movement and burning of bras and all sorts of things, but we won't talk too much about that.
Well, of course, as we know, Parliament was a booze barn in those days. They'd finish their night in the chamber and off to the offices, and I've read these stories, whiskey and everything else would come out.
Well, you know, we are the nation, you know, by repute, rugby, racing and beer. So, you know, that was our... our younger years, I guess, as a country.
Do you think that these kids, and some of them are kids, they're on the booze and drugs at 10, 11, 12.
I had a report just this week from somebody who works in the sector with kids as young as 11. You know, it's intergenerational supply. It's one of the biggest concerns that I have already, because if, you know... Yeah.
I was just trying to look for stats, how many booze barns and pubs we've got in Hamilton. It didn't come up. I was going into one of the things there. Do you know how many pubs are there in Hamilton? You must look back and see how many pubs are there in Hamilton.
Well, what do you mean by pubs?
Well, pubs, clubs, and, of course, they're giving these people, these young people who walk in, and alcohol and whatever too. And
I've just come from Scott's downtown there. There was a very upset young woman in the street whose stuff had been locked in one of the bars last night.
Yes.
There's nobody there to let her in to get her stuff. She wasn't very happy.
Yeah, I know where you go. I've been outside talking to you.
I better straighten that out. I don't, in the wee hours, you won't find me downtown in the clubs and bars.
I know the place. I go past it sometimes, and it's a coffee place. You go for a morning coffee and have a croissant or something like that.
Yeah, well, there's lots of cafes and stuff, and then you see the remnants of the night before, you know, all sorts of bits and pieces.
I've seen this because we've got a rough sleeper sleeping not far from us.
Well, that's something I guess want to talk about for your listeners is the notion of the, you know, moving people on, and it's understandable. And we'll see how the discussion evolves, because moving them on to where.
That is a big discussion, but he's outside the Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints complex opposite Wintec there, and he's boarding himself up. He's got a couple of road cones, and I've taken a photo of it this morning. And
whereabouts? Just so.
It's the Church of Latter-day Saints, the Mormon complex, and near Wintec, on that road. Yeah, just down the road from here, just over the bridge. So, he's boarded up for the day.
Well, there are some people, of course, I know. Some of my clients come from times of having no housing and nowhere to be and what have you. Some people choose to live that life too, yes. though. Mm-hmm. There's a certain amount of freedom when you don't have to report to anywhere and you don't have to pay any rent, you know, and...
It is sad. We talk about beer and other drinks, but sometimes they mix it with party pills so they can stay up all night.
Thank you for bringing it up, because that's one of the things that I want to mention to your listeners. It's now a multitude of different substances mixed together, and they're cut with all sorts of rubbish. And so the reality is that people who use substances, the purpose of the substance is to, you know, the notion of being high, but it has a side effect of having a level of escape from our reality. Mm-hmm. We escape from our reality, even though it be temporary, because when we come down, the same old problems are still there.
Yep. We had a problem in the early 2000s with party pills. There was guys out there making money out of tragedy and...
It's still continues, carrying on. It's still going on, Bruce. I'm pretty sure you see it.
Yeah. Any other thing that you have to mention? How's all the counselling going and with the guys and girls? And
well, we're in a stage of, you know, effectively a growing problem. It's not going to go away. Some of my academic mates researched indicates that we are going to follow along after Canada as a Western kind of society. That's the bad news. The problem isn't going to go away. So I've got an increased problem, and increased numbers of people who get to that place in their lives where they're desperate, mm-hmm. and they make a decision that they don't want to go on. Now, people don't give up drugs and alcohol because they're tired of drugs and alcohol. They consider the option because they've lost contact with their family, the love of their family, and the access to, and a relationship with their children. They're in trouble with the courts. They've got nowhere to live. They've got no job. They've got no money. And those are the things that motivate them to consider stopping. Now, one of the things that motivated me to come to you today was that 35 years sober that I embarked on, that I really want to make sure that your listeners understand this this point of view, but it happens to be the truth of it.
Yep.
So it's the notion about that word alcoholic.
Yes.
That the World Health Organization threw out. We can assess people as being dependent on alcohol and or other drugs and their level of motivation for change. But at the end of the day, people only change because they choose to change.
Of course, I see the signs when I walk through Centre Place. There's signs with young children. It's to do with maybe the thinking of taking their own lives, and you see these photos on these electronic signs and in the shopping malls and all that, and there are 0800 numbers to ring, and there's an organisation in town who counsels people committing suicide and all that, with very funny ideas. And maybe part of it is an alcohol problem. Have you ever been called out to stop a person committing suicide?
Well, it's not an area that ends up with my particular service immediately, because, you know, when you get to that stage, it's, you know, it's fire, ambulance, police. Yeah. And the police, good on them, because they're still providing a level of support to that thing. But it's growing.
Yeah.
Now, the point about the 35 years that I think I need to be fair, when people choose to have a look-see to see if there is a life after alcohol and drugs, they do so with the support, mutual support of other people. This journey isn't one that people travel on alone on them. And so the thing that I have to admit to is, yes, I am a member of Alcoholics Anonymous and Narcotics Anonymous.
Yeah.
Yes, I go to meetings and I sit around with people and I talk about what's going on in my life. Mm-hmm. And listen to other people talk about what's going on in their life. You see, the problem wasn't the alcohol and drugs. That was just the symptom. The problem was needing to belong, to be part of something. And the 12 steps is what gives us the answer to that problem.
There's a major problem now, worldwide shortage of petrol and other materials due to a war that's illegal. But there are problems in households. How do we pay the grocery bills? How do we fill the car?
That in the client group, and they're just more desperate than ever before. But where there's a will, there's a way, and they will find a way to get the money. So if they're using some drugs and alcohol, that's taking food off the table.
Yeah.
Won't be paying bills. Yeah, can't afford the petrol.
And and of course the crimes will still.
Exacerbates the need to. Steal stuff.
I read the story this week that two twins were convicted of stealing stuff from grocery stores and thousands of dollars worth of groceries, maybe a bit of alcohol in there.
There's all of that, and then you'll be hearing more about machetes. I'm sorry to say, but that's the reality.
I've heard those stories too. Those machetes are very dangerous weapons, so
That's right. So I would like to have some good news. The good news is that if people want to change and they're desperate enough to make that decision to have a look-see, they will get there. There is, but there's no magic attached to this. There's no sudden, that's it, my drinking days are over and I'm stopped.
Final point, Stephen. Your accommodation is full at the moment. You've still got some space for someone.
We've always got space because I have been the generous benefactors of our society. I've had a lot of. I have to thank the people, the benefactors and donor people who make donations. You see, they've heard that I've been able to support and help others do the same as myself. And it's by reputation. So we're just in that growing phase.
Yeah.
We're just in that growing phase now. The problem's growing. We need more. We need to do more.
I ask every week. We talk to you. What's your phone number? If people listening to us.
0274.
Yep.
733777.
And you're in the phone book?
If people go online, they'll find us. But the important part is, yes, I do take those calls because they're increasing, and I've told the government the calls are increasing. The mothers of this country are not happy that their kids have made some poor choices and got involved in recreational substance use, but there's no point in locking them up. What they need is counselling, rehab, time out from the community in a supportive environment away from the bottle store and away from the drug dealer.
And the drug court is still going?
Drug court's still going.
Is in Hamilton, any other courts in around New Zealand? Auckland has got one, of course. And
It's a tricky model, and you have to have the resources to support it. But so far, so good. I don't think you're going to see, it's not the huge, but the model we need more of is the opportunity, and this is kind of where me and Matt Ducey part company.
Yeah.
The theory is ambulance at the top of the cliff, early intervention and prevention. Tell the kids about alcohol and drugs. Work with people before they get to that stage of being homeless. Now, the notion is that residential rehab is at the bottom of the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I want to change that, and I want to take the supportive accommodation to the top of the cliff.
You got to fill a bus up and put them at the top of the cliff.
We just need to not only get onto it earlier, but we need to be supportively helping them get the needs thing. And one of those things is people need food. That's just the social worker's ideology. People need food and shelter.
And of course, that is where you get into the head of Hamilton City Councillors, the Mayor Tim McIndoe. He's been there. You've got to get into his head too and say something has got to be done here in Hamilton.
Absolutely. They are working away at it. I know that they are.
Yep.
And you just need to go see them at the night shelter. Yeah.
We've got a night shelter just down the road from here. And when I came up here yesterday, there was a police car outside there. So, hey. You've got to start moving, Mr. Mayor.
People are desperate. When people become desperate, they do things that You know, you would, they would think otherwise if they weren't in that state of desperation.
Yep. Just got to keep out of trouble. Hey, Stephen, thank you.
That's helpful.
It's a pleasure. Hey, we're going to get back to the days of Woodstock because we've got a track from the one and only, the late Joe Cocker. I hope he does come up. Here we go. From his album, Mad Dogs and Englishmen, this is Delta Lady, recorded live. Soundtrack of Mad Dogs and Englishmen, that is the late Joe Cocker and Delta Lady at 3FM 89.0. Thank you, Stephen King, on a Sunday afternoon. Well, it was this day in 1973 that the US troops returned to the USA after a fruitless war in Asia and South Vietnam. Many, many casualties. We had the My Lai Massacre. And when we talk to Gary before 2 o'clock, we'll just mention to him that it is the anniversary of US troops returning home. And in 1973, the song was released based on upon the fact, tie a yellow ribbon round the old oak tree. This is Tony Orlando and Dawn.
I'm coming home, I've done my time. Now I've got to know what is and isn't mine. If you receive my letter telling you I'd soon be free, then you'll know just what to do if you still want me. If you still want me. Well, tie a yellow ribbon around the old
don't see a ribbon around the old oak tree. I'll stay on the bus, forget about us, put the blame on me. If I don't see a yellow ribbon around the old oak tree. Bus driver, please look for me, 'cause I couldn't bear to see what I might see. I'm really still in prison, and my love, she holds the key. A simple yellow ribbon's what I need to set me free. I wrote and told her, please, oh, tie a yellow ribbon around the old. And I can't believe I see 100 yellow ribbons around the old tree. I'm coming home.
Well, it's associated with prison, but it's also associated with the Vietnam War. Tony Orlando and Dawn, Tie Yellow Ribbon Round the Old Oak Tree. Well, we told you in our history lesson today the death this day in 2024 of American actor, Academy Award-winning actor Lewis Cameron Gossett Jr. He was an American actor who made his stage debut at the age of 7. He won his Oscar, appearing in this movie, An Officer and a Gentleman with Richard Gere. Again, here is Joe Cocker and Jennifer Warnes.
Who knows what tomorrow brings? In a world few hearts survive.
All I know is the way I feel. When it's real, I keep it alive. The road is long. There are mountains in our way, but we climb a stair every day. Looking behind. I'm
Of the Aotearoa Suite as Ron Goodwin and the New Zealand Symphony Orchestra. Good afternoon, Mel. How are you?
Very well indeed, and appreciated the fog this morning that closed Auckland International Airport. But one day we'll strike it open when they are fogged. No.
As I said earlier, it affected Hamilton Airport yesterday because jockeys were trying to travel to Wellington for a race. Meetings at Trentham yesterday, and jockeys coming into Hamilton. They had to change riders for some of the horses. Anyway, back to because we're going down to the middle of the North Island
to Western Curtin, he being the mayor of Rupehu. And I'm wondering about the paintings that it seems is given to the mayor's art advisory group. Western, Peter McIntyre.
Yes, good afternoon and greetings from the Ruapehu, Mel. And it's been a long time since we have had Peter McIntyre's sort of work in the area, but his family is still in the area, still in the southern part of the district at a place called Kākahi. So Peter McIntyre is a legend, of course, for this area, and we don't sort of talk about it too much, but he's certainly a well-respected person way back in the times, I understand, during the war, for example. So he's well-recognised, a lot of the work that he does, or has done, is still in circulation, but we really appreciate his work and his family connections.
It's kind of confusing with me, Weston. Was he a serving officer and official war artist? Did he fight, or was he just painting?
Ooh, out of my lane a little bit on that one. Good question. We'll have to Google that one. The AI will tell us. But I imagine that he was sort of aside. You know, he wasn't actually fighting as such. He was official, so he'll be protected. I can only speculate, protected somewhat during those times to ensure that there was good evidence, I guess, or sort of get a feel for what actually was happening. And so it's quite interesting stories around that.
And what's happening with the Mayor's Art Advisory Group?
Well, that's an initiative by a fairly new elected member, John Chapman, who is in the southern part of the district of Ratahi. He's been very interested in actually getting all the groups together throughout the district. And what we have seen is an upsurge of people interested in arts. We have a number of groups of different aspects of art. And so rather than actually go off on tangents and have different events at different times a year, the idea for John and the council was to actually try and coordinate it so that everyone's sort of thinking the same, having events and significant, you know, artworks on display at different times of the year. We have a lot of interest in each of the communities, and it's widespread. Just to give you an example, it's probably an hour and a half between each of the communities. And so everyone is very parochial, very proud of their communities, and the attempt is that we actually bring these groups together at times and focus on online activities and the like, and try and rejuvenate, if that's the right word, arts in this area. So it's becoming more popular. Just to give you an idea, in Tamaranui, I think year before last, we had 300 entries, and there are wide coming into the area. One or two from Auckland and various parts of the country. So it's really just to, you know, acknowledge the fact that art is on increase, and also that we take it seriously, and we want to promote that through, you know, our council.
Okay, okay. I've gone to Google AI. Peter McIntyre served in the 2nd New Zealand Expeditionary Force and was posted to the 34th Anti-Tank Battery. By 1940, he was serving in the Middle East with the 2nd New Zealand Division, where his artwork called the attention of a future New Zealand Governor-General, one Bernard Freyberg. So he was serving in one of our famous regiments.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, it just shows you that not only was he dodging bullets, he was actually... you know, doing some artwork. So, you know, that's another great story, actually. Thank goodness that we've got that on record.
And he was, for his efforts in consistently representing art of a kind that was widely appreciated, conferred the OBE. Now, something else that's being rejuvenated is the Chateau. Opened in 1929 as the first New Zealand Chateau-type tourist hotel. It's been in doubt for these recent past years.
Certainly has, and over the last couple of years, people have been concerned that this building may be exposed to be demolished on the National Tongariro National Park. And so as a council and as a mayor, I've actually been proactive in getting a petition to save the chateau. We got 15,500 signatures that was presented to the parliament last year. And the idea was to keep that conversation going, to actually retain this heritage building to its former glory. To do that, we needed to, I guess, signal that it's not a matter of getting taxpayer funding. It was a matter of actually seeing whether there was an appetite from individual investors throughout New Zealand, if not the world. And it just so happens, as a result of the publicity that has taken place in the last year or two, we've got at least one, if not many others, that are interested in putting forward a proposal to the government as early as next month, 21st of April, I think, is the deadline for individuals to put forward their best foot forward to actually, you know, explain what their project is or proposal is. We know that there are serious investors out there prepared to actually invest in the chateau. We're talking serious money here, Mel, that, you know, would be in the vicinity of $100 million. To do that, you need a runway of at least 100 to 120-odd years. And that creates a problem for the government under the current Act of Parliaments. And so they're reviewing that. They're reviewing the fact that we need to actually save this chateau. So the announcement last week was giving us confidence as a nation that the government are prepared to see who's out there and what's out there, and also give some support. One or two of those is actually reviewing the National Parks Act and the Conservation Act, and the other is the seismic conditions around not only our area but of course around the country. So they've made some significant changes to that, so the criteria around that is altered. How that affects the chateau, I don't know. It's out of my lane a little bit, but only to say that we're getting closer now to actually getting people around the table to actually start discussing the future of the chateau. And it looks to me as though the government are actually serious now about retaining the chateau, if in fact we can get all the investors and iwi and other partners all together around the table to start discussing how that is going to take place. And fortunately, we're now having a roadmap to actually see that happen.
Weston, just someone outside the studio talking. The state of Ruapehu, is it bubbling, or are the other mountains in the area bubbling at the moment, or where's you're safe at the moment?
Well, certainly not safe. We've come out of an area or come out of a sort of a phase where we've had lost jobs. We've lost jobs in the southern part of the district. I think it was 230 jobs in Winston Pulp Mill. We'd already lost some of our people through the chateau, for example, earlier. So we've had our moments in terms of employment or companies folding. But tourism has been up and down. As you can recall, you know, we had COVID. We had no snow in the national park, both sides of the chateau, and sorry, the Ruapehu and Tūrā. We're fortunate that we've now got administration on each side of the mountains to actually cater for any snow that we get in the wintertime. And we're just fingers crossed to actually see a good ski season. But it hasn't been fantastic. However, we've got a platform. If in fact we do get snow, we can actually, you know, ensure that, you know, we retain that type of activity. But it does mean that it just adds value to the sort of activities we've got around Ruapehu. We've got some exciting news around some of the cycleways. We've got an extending the mountain to sea, for example, cycleways. We've got the Tungurua Crossing, which attracts thousands and thousands of people any one year. Give you an example of, you know, the type of activities we've got just the outdoors. It's a million visitors a year that actually comes into our area. $200 million is actually generated as a result of that. So we close one door and we open another, and that's what we're doing. We're fighting back as a council, as a region, to ensure that, you know, we've got the best possible facilities for New Zealanders.
On the,
and so it's looking good.
On the personal side, I've been up to the chateau, staying in Taupo. We took a drive round from Taupo to Ruapehu and the chateau. It was a beautiful day, fine day, and then guess what? The fog comes in, and the the chateau is lost in the fog. What a what an amazing scene!
Absolutely. Well, it's certainly magic when, you know, those days of having weddings and, you know, celebrations and the conferences and everything else. So it's always a draw card, but you get the odd day, of course, where it's sort of blanked out. I think it's fair to say, though, the backdrop sells it all. You know, the environment that we're in is fantastic. It's a sort of a heritage building that we believe must be, you know, retained, because it's an icon and also a heritage building that we should retain, because New Zealand is, as you know, a young country, and if we lose this, then, you know, say goodbye to a lot of history.
Hey, Weston, we've got to go. So next guest, hey, keep in touch with us and we'll get back to you. It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
There we are, Weston Curtin. Under that mountain when the fog comes in. We talked about Peter McIntyre, and this is from 1927, popular World War II singer Ana Hato. From 1927, the late Ana Hato, who used to sing with Dean Waratini Sr., they were first cousins, and that is Pokari Kariana. Time to talk to former Hamilton Mayor, journalist, broadcaster, lady of many parts. Good afternoon, Margaret Evans.
And good afternoon to you and everybody else.
We wondered about the city and the way that it looks. So attractive it's been in the city, in the nearest the Founders Theatre site. There is the big roundabout there where Norton Road begins, and it's close to the centre of the city relatively, but not to be right at the heart of it. And there has been the opportunity to display endless flowers around that big circumference, looking beautifully better than many of our home gardens that disappoint us. Takes a lot of water, and water is a subject that's cropping up in this coming meeting with the Hamilton City Council coming up this week. And if we look at the city, and we ask ourselves, how's it looking? What do you say, Margaret Evans?
Oh, that's a really interesting question. Well, I think I share the view of so many people. It's not like it used to be. And it's not like it could be, which is the important question. And I will point to two things. Number one, we used to be called the City of Trees. And the trees more in the central area, I don't mean it's central city, are still there. And I live opposite a beautiful lot of trees. We need to plant more to get back to that green environment we used to be so proud of. And the other element is city gardens. And you only have to walk through the main street to see how bedraggled and how lacking in care and attention that they are compared to the way they used to be. And if I can say one more comment, some of you may remember when Julie Hardacre was mayor, and she insisted on planting some roses in and around the central city. And there was a bit of fuss about that at the time. But, you know, I walked through there the other day, and what was left of the roses were blooming. And they did look absolutely wonderful. So there's my overview. Something's gone wrong. There's no lack of money in the city. The council's take from rates and fees and all the rest of it is bigger than it ever has been. It's just the way it's being spent. And I'm one of those who think we just need to do much more in the way of maintenance.
Margaret, one of these things that I come into town and I walk through the city on a Sunday sometimes, and the amount of rubbish on the ground. The main street of Hamilton is looking a bit dowdy. What needs to happen? They need a big water truck to go up on both sides of Victoria Street and just turn the taps on and wash it down, because it is filthy coming into town on a Sunday.
And, you know, I can say to you, it's not just on a Sunday. And my understanding is that some years ago, the council moved from, you remember that old-fashioned truck that used to go round with scrubbers as well as water?
Mm-hmm.
And that, at tender time, was more expensive than what was essentially a vacuum cleaner.
Yep.
And it's so funny the way you explained that, because a certain councillor said to me the other day that he was very keen to see those water trucks come back in every night. And remember, this is a bit of a joke. He felt that they should be able to spray water right through the downtown area, particularly under the verandas.
Yep.
He thought that would might cure some other problems as well.
Mm-hmm. It's not only Hamilton. Yesterday I was reminded about the late Ted Armstrong. And one day I said to Ted, hey, Frankton needs a coat of paint. He got very angry at me, but the person I was talking to agreed with me that Frankton needs a bit of a clean-up too.
Now, there's two things there. Firstly, I was part of a group that gave submissions to the Deputy Mayor's new Central City Revitalisation Committee, and we're called Footsteps into History. And the background to us is that we started off wanting to identify the stories behind the street names, because some of us did just a little potted survey and not a single soul knew who Alexandra was, let alone Victoria. So that's the background. Now, coming back to the point that you're making, what we said to Jeff's committee, and can I please give a promo for Richard Swainson is one of our teams.
Yep.
And Richard actually lives in the CBD. We've got Neil Kurgenson, and Neil has been involved with Heritage Hamilton and Heritage New Zealand for a long time, and so got lots and lots of marvellous knowledge there. And we've got Russell Armitage.
Yes.
And Russell is known for his interest in heritage, the arts, and a whole range of things.
Yeah.
And also does some writing.
Yeah.
And that's just an example of some of our group that come together. And we also include the Central Business Association and Vanessa Williams. So we've got, you know, some really great people that are talking about these issues.
Mm.
And so what we've come up with, firstly, is we are saying, is it time to bring back the task force green concept. Can you imagine if there was a dedicated group, maybe 10, maybe 20, maybe more, that included trainees, that included apprenticeships, that was talented right across the board, so that they could fix some of the signs when they got broken, they could do some gardening, they could do some painting. So that was one idea that came through. And some of you may remember
yes.
that back in the 80s and the 90s, Hamilton was one of the larger Task Force Green operators in the country. And we would get dollar for dollar from central government.
Yep.
And we had hundreds of people employed, and that trained employment for the future.
Yep.
That also included, for instance, the development of a lot of the stuff at the Hamilton Gardens. So there was a lot of talent required. These were not just, silly jobs. These were important jobs. So that's one idea. Is it time, with the unemployment being the way it
yep.
is, with the number of youth who are unemployed, maybe we need to think, a bit wider.
Yep.
Now, the second area is all the empty shops.
Well, Margaret. I was going to make a suggestion that we use the people who live at these night shelters. Maybe they could do some of this, stuff, and instead of getting on the booze and the drugs. Yeah. And
absolutely, give them engagement,
yeah.
give them occupation. So
it's not a
simple idea, and it's been done before. And the same thing with
yeah.
the empty shops.
Yeah.
They are often empty buildings, and most of those buildings have bathrooms. Some have kitchenettes. And the thought is, should we not encourage the City Council, the CBD Association
yep.
and others, it may even be people like the People's Place, etc.,
yep.
To look at whether or not there can be some rule changes
yep.
and make some of those places available firstly for shop fronts that might have displays or whatever behind them with clean windows, but also perhaps for more accommodation, for
yep.
residential
yep.
purposes. These are the sort of ideas that are floating around that people are talking about. And what we attempted to do was be the megaphone
yeah.
and take them to Jeff and his committee
yeah.
and say, hey, let's get serious about some of these
yeah.
ideas.
Margaret, we've got to go, but we're going to catch up with you and either you or other members. I met Richard Swainson at the London Abad during the week. I was having dinner with family. So, yeah, I saw Richard the other night, but we'll catch up with him the other day, Margaret.
Okay, and
it's a pleasure.
Think about these.
Yes, it's a pleasure. That is Margaret Evans, former mayor of the city, and one of the ladies who brought, of course, the one and only statue of Dame Hilda Ross into Hamilton.
Roll on, Waikato, roll down to the sea, and tell me the story. The old Maori wars, and the day the great mower came down to your shores. Long, long ago, when the mountains were small, this river we loved didn't flow here at all. The volcanoes roared and the river ran free, for the delta to ride as it rolls to the sea. For this is what dreams are made of.
Was on this day in 1973, US troops were pulling out of Vietnam. Their service was done. Good afternoon, Gary Schofield.
Good afternoon, Bruce.
United States President Donald Trump is assembling immense military power in the Mideast Strait with the presence of the 87th Parachute Division ready to deploy in dramatic landings at strategic locations in the Persian Gulf. Is this the setting for, not a film this time, but a real battle? Gary Schofield.
It is. I believe, should that go ahead, and I would very much like to give the President some strategic advice, if they would listen and you'd hear it first on your show.
The White House is listening.
That's wonderful. And I would just also like to reinforce Bruce's comment about history, especially with Vietnam. And I'd like to bring up another little piece of history as a prelude, because, of course, you might remember General Shinseki. It's been a long time, but during the Iraq War and the preparation for the Iraq War, he said that the United States needed at least 300,000 troops to occupy Iraq. And that was based on his understanding of history, where you also had in Europe, a lot of people don't realize this, but there were literally millions of troops occupying Germany and Japan after World War II. So that's the scale that it takes to occupy a country. We are talking here about 5,000 troops. Maybe there's another 10,000 coming. It's not clear. That's 15. Even if you had 100,000 occupying and subduing Iran in that fashion, it's not really tenable. So what is the plan? The plan is to take Karg Island, so they say. But if you're going to do that, and don't forget, I'm really a proponent that this was a terrible idea always in the first place with the attack on Iran. But if you're going to do that, far better, I think, to try and take the island of Qasim. Now, that island is at the choke point of the Strait of Hormuz. If you land all the way into Karg Island, you have to supply. What if you have to get people off? That means you have to break through all the defenses of the straits and the perils of that, and you've got the missiles and everything else. I think far better to rely on occupying what is a strategic stronghold where there are so many missiles that are going to rain down on anybody that is trying to be on the ground in those areas. So it would seem to me that that would be a better choice. You could also bring in Qatar and the United Arab Emirates and make a proper job of that one goal. By the way, the goal now is to free the Strait of Hormuz, which happened to be open before the war, by the way.
Yeah, but the
so
thing,
that's my contribution for the White House in the best spirit that I can, because we could find a political chasm should this war be a disaster and there be casualties on top of that, apart from the implication to the world of the supply and everything else.
But beneath it, Gary, Donald Trump is out to make money, and he wants to host events at Mar-a-Lago, of course, and he wants to charge people millions to hear about and share war secrets, etc., etc. He's out to make a bit of money out of this war.
Actually making money, funny you should say that, because he's actually making money and he's putting his name on it, like notes. That you might have heard that story.
Yes, I heard that.
There's some historical precedent that would be to have your name or even your image on a coin. That hasn't been done. I'm sure that it's a gray area, even though it's definitive in law. The power of the United States is divided into three. There is the executive branch, there is the congressional branch, and there is also the judicial branch. So it's more than just the judicial, the law, and how you interpret this. He could say, well, my goodness, it's the 250th commemoration of the country. This is a new thing. We're breaking new territory. And by the way, it's legal for Besant, who is the Secretary of the Treasury, to have his name on it. Why doesn't he give me permission? And so you'd have lawyers arguing these kind of things. And I tell you what, he won't win if, again, he loses the political power through a disastrous Iran.
On the other side, of course, we had calls by Tucker Carlson and others. I think Tucker has lost his favour with Trump. But there are calls this week that Baron Trump has to go to war. He has to get into uniform, etc. Are we going to be sending young men back to war like we did in World War II and Korea and before?
If this spirals out of control, if other countries like the Houthis just got involved, it's a minor thing. But go back to the war in June of last year, where you had the Houthis had access to hypersonic weaponry. Should all these things escalate, should Russia continue to assist Iran, should China continue to assist Iran, you could indeed have a mobilization of war, and that could include, right, well, I think it's unlikely to include the president's son, but certainly you asked the question about young men and women. So, yes, it would be, this was always a terrible idea. So I could, but Vietnam, you have to understand how this is also a parallel in some ways because of the insurgency factor. So in Vietnam, you could win every battle, and people don't realize that it's the insurgency that caused the defeat of the strongest, yeah, mightiest power in human history. And similar here, it's an asymmetric conflict. So, yes, lots of progress, and everybody can say that they've bombed all these buildings and structures and diminished the capacity of Iran. But when, if existential threat, if the reason to be, if that is the reason for war from the Iranian side, just to exist, it's going to be difficult to win under those conditions.
I caught up this week with Stuart sending me a picture of him and his birth certificate, his degree to practice law in the old USA of America. And of course,
isn't that wonderful?
It is. Do you think he'll be drafted himself because he's got dual citizenship?
I don't think we're at the draft already, but we have a situation where, what about supply of weaponry, yep, and all the other, it's, yep, not only manpower that's required in conflict, yep, but also ammunition.
Yep.
So diminishing stocks of that, you know, is also a concern, but Sorry, carry on.
We've got to leave you here because we've got two more people to talk to. Gary, we'll talk to you on Easter Sunday next week.
I look forward to that, and may it be a time of peace and blessing between now and then.
And bless you too. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Now, this here's a story about the Battle of Waikato, which was fit between the British, of course, and the Maori.
Yeah, we went to war with the Maori back in the 1860s during the Maori War, and that's a bit of Waikato history. And of course, Hamilton, good afternoon, Dwayne Porter.
Good afternoon, troops.
Ships currently berthed at or expected in the port of Tauranga, all scheduled to sail in the next few days, are?
They are the TS Huia, which is a load of steel. Also, we've got a kiwifruit boat. We've got a Costco container ship boat. We've got another container boat. I can tell you now, the biggest part is at the moment is the log export is on the market, pretty good. Now, I just want to mention to the people about the petrol. There's going to be a petrol boat arriving in on the 1st. Of April, 2nd of the April and the 4th of the April, and that's going to be the last lot of fuel coming into New Zealand at the moment, because like the jet fuel, the Waikato Westpac helicopter, they've got enough jet fuel, same as the Tauranga Hospital, same as the Napier Hospital, and all the hospitals in Auckland as well. So there was a boat went out early hours in the morning at 1:15, and she'll be June in Wellington around about now. So they'll get a load and then got a petrol boat coming from Wellington to Tauranga to Nelson, and then from Napier to Tauranga out to the sea, and then again Napier, Tauranga, Wellington, Tauranga to Wellington, and then back out to the sea. So it sounds like the boat, those boats will be going over to Australia to be picking up the fuel.
And, we'll have to talk more about this next week, because we've got to fit in Trevor's talk before we go at 2 o'clock.
Absolutely.
Nothing.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Say it again, y'all. What? Look out.
What is it good for?
Absolutely.
Now
listen to me. Oh, oh. Thousands of mothers die when their sons go out to fight and lose their lives. I said, war! Good God, y'all.
What is it?
That's the late Edwin Starr and War. We've been on a war front this afternoon. It's 4 minutes to two, and time to have Trevor's talk. Good afternoon, sir.
Good afternoon. I enjoy a good program on TV when I see one. And one I quite like is, at the moment, is America's Got Talent. It also has a series on Britain's Got Talent. But the thing that puzzles me in that program is that Simon Cowell, he's one of the panel of judges, and he's also involved with the program, making the program itself. He wears the same T-shirt every week. Every episode is on, he's got the same coloured T-shirt, and he's unshaven. And the rest of the panel of judges are immaculately dressed, well-groomed. And there's Simon Cowell. Looks like he's just finished cutting the back hedge and doing the lawns on a Sunday afternoon. But another thing is, with that program, the theory is that exceptional acts get the golden buzzer. That means they go straight through to the final. But what I can't understand of that idea is, if they give the golden buzzer for an extremely good act, and three or four acts down the track, there's an act that surpasses the one that got the golden buzzer by a mile, but they can't get the golden buzzer because they can only give out one golden buzzer. So what I thought myself, wouldn't it be better if they just did the golden buzzer at the end of the show?
Well, it's hope for us yet. We could all turn up as a trio. Can you sing?
No. I used to be able to imitate an animal, but that's about as far as it goes.
Oh, well, we could always sing harmony. We could always send Harmony Waikato to Britain's Got Talent. More about that later. Anyway, you've heard our interviews this afternoon, everyone from Margaret Evans to everybody else. So it's a pleasure seeing you this week. You've had a good week?
Oh, it's very good, actually.
Yeah. Let's go back. Oh, Mel, you got something else to say? Let's go out. Well, the English band Christie and San Bernardino talking about California.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.